Welcome to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, today featuring her sister, best-selling author, speaker, and holistic physical therapist, Sally Morgan. Are you looking for a deeper connection with your animals, exploring options in alternative healing modalities, searching for training options that you feel good about? Listen now to Sally as she interviews the top experts that answer your questions to help keep your pets naturally healthy.
Hello, you are listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, and I am Sally Morgan, Dr. Judy Morgan's sister, a holistic physical therapist for pets and people, and your host today. You can hear this show every Monday and Tuesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on DreamVision7Radio.com. And today I'm here with my guest, Suzanne Clothier, who I have known of and met a few times in my life for many, many, many years. Suzanne Clothier began working with animals professionally in 1977, and she has a varied background of experience, including obedience training, agility, search and rescue, kennel management, and program development. She is well respected for her humane, effective, relationship-centered training approach to dogs and the people who love them. She was listed in Who's Who in Dogs back in 1997, and she has taught in U.S., Canada, Belgium, Holland, and throughout the world. And she is well regarded as a person who has a lot of expertise with service and guide dog organizations. And some of her work includes these tools that she's developed, one called CARAT, C-A-R-A-T, which is a temperament assessment and scoring system, an enriched puppy protocol call, which is a program for puppy development, the relationship assessment tool to look at the dynamics between dogs and their humans, the functional assessment tracking, which is a 15-dimension assessment of the individual dog, as well as the CCC, Connection, Cooperation, and Control, which is a puzzle-based training program. She has served as a committee member on the AKC's Agility Advisory Board and as a committee member of the American Humane Association Task Force for the Development of Humane Standards in Dog Training. And boy, am I grateful for that. Her book, which was revolutionary in the world of dog training, Bones Would Rain from the Sky, Deepening Our Relationship with Dogs, came out in 2002, and the Wall Street Journal has called that one of the top five dog books, and it is really a treasure. I highly encourage everyone to read it. In her spare time, Suzanne is a German Shepherd breeder and has nine generations of Hawks Hunt German Shepherds, which are successful in competitive performance sports, search and rescue, herding, therapy work, and, of course, as her companions. She lives in upstate New York with her long-suffering dog hair-covered husband, I'm sure, and their family of animals, dogs, cats, rabbits, tortoises, parrots, well, not rabbits, Scottish Highland cattle, donkeys, pigs, and chickens. Welcome to our show, Suzanne.
Well, thank you, and thanks for giving me rabbits. I love rabbits.
I do, too.
When did I acquire rabbits? Good Lord. Yes, thanks for having
rabbits,
me.
Rabbits, parrots, it all looks the same. So, yes. Suzanne, one of my first things that I learned about you was through my work with Tellington Tea Touch. People were mentioning your name. So I'd like to know, because many people listening will be Tea Touch practitioners, how did that work with Tea Touch inspire or validate your realizations about working with dogs? Did it change how you were or continue what you already knew?
So I met Linda in 1992, maybe 91. I can't quite remember. I think it was 92. And so she just cemented for me what I had already felt, which was that a lot of traditional training approaches didn't make a great deal of sense. And watching her work with a very intense little mare down at the DuPont estate, she pretty much, you know, flew in the face of all the operant conditioning and learning theory rules, and the horse continued to, apparently the parrots are going to be helping us today.
Yes, they want to say.
Between a macaw and an Amazon, I thought they'd be nice and quiet, but so yeah, it just took my little roadmap of life as a trainer and tossed it away, but I knew that that was what I wanted, so I had to reorganize and figure out what I was doing that didn't match and what Linda was doing that was cool. And so I spent quite a few years studying with her. I was at the the very first companion animal training that Linda ever did out in Tasuki. So, yeah, spent quite a few years with Linda with horses and other critters, working with Marnie Reeder, working with Copper Love, who's a good friend of mine.
Yes, I love Copper.
Yeah. So learned a lot that way, incorporated it, but just wasn't quite ready. Already had a very full schedule, so becoming a T-Touch practitioner just wasn't going to work for me. But that work I have spread far and wide, introduced a lot of people to it, and just feel very lucky that I was able to learn from, you know, Linda and Copper and Marnie. So every now and then I'll pull something out of my back pocket and people think, wait, where did you learn that? Like, from Linda.
She's had such an impact on trainers of horses and dogs and every animal.
Yep. So it's it definitely informed, it just crystallized. I think that would be a really good way to say it. Wasn't that I was on a different path and then took a hard right turn. I didn't. I just realized, aha, that's the better path that I wish to be on. So if I had my money, all trainers would understand a lot of what's taught in T-Touch and would have the basics under their belt, especially a lot of the groundwork, but that just doesn't seem to have been the case. So I'm grateful when people do understand that work and can apply it.
Well, and just the whole approach to animals that comes out of the T-Touch approach is, I think, very different from the rest of the world's view of animals. Which brings us to your relationship-centered training techniques. Can you tell me how you think that work is unique from other training methods, and especially compare it to positive training? Because that's something a lot of people are familiar with now, but I, like you, want to go past positive training.
So I started as a, you know, I grew up in the horse world, so I certainly grew up in the, you know, force will get you where you're going. You know, intelligently applied corrections can certainly be effective training tools, but outside of working a horse officially, that's just not how I interacted, and the same thing with dogs. And so I shifted away from that towards a much more motivational, positive, used a lot of rewards, and there is still something that was a big difference between how I lived with my animals and how I trained or worked them. And, you know, there was that concept as a trainer, you got to work an animal.
Right.
Not so much a joint two-way street as a, I'm gonna make you do this. So then when you switch to motivational, and this is what positive training is about, I want to make this dog want to do what I want him to do. So it's still about what you want him to do.
Right.
And that's a reality of life with animals, is that there does have to be a point where you've put them in a position where that's how it has to be. You need to teach them how to work with you within this framework of life we've given them. They're not free to walk away. And so I still kept thinking there's a lot missing, and what was missing sometimes was the concept that the dog doesn't live in a vacuum. He's not a Skinner pigeon or lab rat sitting in a sterile environment hoping something will show up to amuse him. He lives in a world. So the horses were already busy having a day and talking to their horse friends and amusing themselves with chasing chickens and talking to the goats. My dogs had a rich life, and then I would interrupt it with, you know, I have this important thing to teach you.
That's right.
So the positive training helped, but it still seemed what I call the obscene question, the indecent proposal. You know, I know you don't want to do this animal, but look, I've got hot dogs. I've got bits of chicken. I've got a cookie. Now will you do it? Still wasn't the willing cooperation I wanted. So then I stepped back further and thought everything's about the relationship. So whatever it is I'm going to do with or to or for this animal is always calculated in terms of how will this impact my relationship with this animal. And so when I start with that as the nucleus of all I do, the overarching framework, I make very different decisions than a trainer who says, I'm being fair, I have cookies, I'm gonna make this happen. And so they'll do it in a kind way, but there's still not a two-way street going on. And if it is not good for the animal, it doesn't always get on their radar. I've seen many trainers take fearful dogs, push them into situations they actually can't handle very well,
mm-hmm.
and then say, well, you know, I gave him lots and lots of chicken. You know, we had hot dogs. If I just pay him enough day after day after day, he'll be fine, instead of saying, wait. Can you imagine saying to a friend, I know you're afraid, I do, but I've got a lot of cookies here.
There is not enough cookies in the world to ask me to hold a snake, Suzanne. I know totally what you're talking
about. Exactly. It's like, oh, no. As long as we have enough wine and enough cookies, I'm sure I can get you to walk around with this boa. And we might get some cooperation depending on our friend, but we start to erode their trust in us. We would not feel heard by that person, and I think that's one of the things that animals look for, as all of us do, is, do you hear me? Because if you hear me, then maybe I can trust you. But if you don't hear me, this is why we have leashes. This is why we have collars and harnesses, because we need to keep their bodies with us, because we don't have their minds with us. So that's
well, and that traditional training, I think, also takes away a lot of the joy of our time that we spend with our animals. It's very different when you have a relationship with your dog than when he's being a good soldier and doing what you tell him.
Right. You know, if your relationship consists of, and this is a common thing among some highly regarded trainers, is unless you're working with them, you know, they should be resting quietly waiting for you to come back and start the fun again. The concept that an animal could have a rich, full life and friends and stuff to do that you interrupt from time to time, as you do with any friend's life, they don't like that concept. And there's a training philosophy that says, you know, I call it taking them hostage, but no one else plays with them, no one else talks to them, no one else ever rewards them. All good things come from me. Mm-hmm. There's an article on my website about that one, you know, hostages and relationships. Like, if we cross that out and we hear a man say that about his wife, or a mother say that about her child, we would be horrified.
That's
and
right.
We would think that's not a relationship. That's the Stockholm Syndrome at work. So when we have freedom, you know, it's one of the war cries, right, of the marine mammal trainers. We don't need shock collars. We don't need choke collars. Well, no, you don't. They're already hostage. All their food, water, and all entertainment they have comes from you. So that sets up a dynamic that I'm not particularly fond of. If the relationship is how we sort, is this good for me and my animal, that changes everything. Changes everything. It's what I call keeping the light on in their eyes. If the light's not on, why?
That's right. What
and
do you think?
Dim, why?
What?
I said, I see that light starting to dim because of something I did or chose to do or didn't do, then I've got a big obligation to fix that.
Right, to get that connection back. What do you think most people miss when they're trying to have a relationship with their dogs, do you think? Like, you see thousands of clients, and some of them will come to you and say, I have a great relationship with my dog, and you might not see that. What do you think lots of people don't get?
I think what they don't get... Hang on one second. Hey, Mila. I think one of the things they don't get is that they're not listening for the answers.
Exactly.
So that if I'm talking to you and I say something, then you're listening to my answer, and then your answer informs my answer, and my answer informs your answer, and we go back and forth. So I see that people don't wait for the answer, and they don't seem to actually trust that the animal is even working on the question. So I talk about a moment at a seminar where this very interesting hound mix, I asked her to do something, and she was, you could see her thinking about it. It was a new request. It changed the dynamic of what we were doing. And so I just waited because I could see the wheels turning, and I knew she was contemplating what she was going to do about that. But what caught my attention was that the trainers in the audience began to get very restless. So after about 30 seconds, some of them were saying, oh, this will never work. This is a stupid demo. I would have done this. I would have done that. I would have done that. I could hear them whispering.
Mm.
And the better trainers, at about a minute, started to think, like, oh, the criteria is too big. I could almost hear in their heads all the technical jargon.
That trainer speak.
that was explaining this untenable delay. And, I don't know, somewhere around 2 minutes and 15 seconds, the dog said, oh, yeah, I can do that, and executed it perfectly. And I had just waited. She clearly said, I'm working on this. I said, all right. And she was. But the lack of patience. When people say you have to have patience, it's like, no, I really mean patience. Like, truly, unless she's wandered off and is doing something else, if the dog is looking right at you, sorting, if I asked you something and you're like, I don't know, let me think about that. No, now.
Right.
We will not give dogs the time that, wow, it's just amazing to me. So time, patience, and really listening. Because we could actually see whether or not what we're doing is working if we're really listening.
That brings me to my next question, which is, because I talk a lot about listening to your animals as well, what can you tell people to help them understand what listening to your animal is about their posture and their behavior and their gaze? I mean, what a few things can you offer?
I think one thing that would be good to always keep in mind, breathing, is breathe in, breathe out. You know what I mean? I probably couldn't say how many hours I've clocked in marching around arenas with Linda.
Breathing.
Breathe in.
Right.
Breathe out. So an awareness of where you're at in your own head. Are you actually open, literally open? You know, where are you carrying the tension? Because if you lock down your own being, if you've got your jaw locked and your breathing is kind of shallow and you're not blinking, first of all these things in body language say to a dog, something's not right here. That's not, if you think about a dog, if you saw that posture, you'd be somewhat alarmed. An unblinking, tense, shallow breathing dog should always get your attention as something potentially dangerous, if not shut down. So breathing, a sense of no time. I don't know any better way to say it. It's not like I'm calculating, well, that was 15 seconds, that was 16 seconds, and now this dog's never going to do it. I just lay the question in front of the animal with a thought or whatever we're working on, the request, and then I just wait.
It's a bit of that phenomenon we see where your six-year-old can load the horse in the trailer where three trainers could not because they have no agenda. They just wait, hold the lead line, look in, and the horse follows them.
Exactly. And that animal time sense, it's a very fluid thing. It's definitely about being in the flow. My husband and I once had to break up we didn't break it up. We just called the two fighting bulls over to a point in the farm where we could separate them by gates. But when it was all said and done, it was not minutes that was required because we weren't going to go out and interrupt two bulls physically. We were going to lose that war. But they heard us. So even though they were fighting, both bulls could hear us calling them. So as they fought, they walked their way 300 plus feet to where we were. But that took literally over an hour and a half, almost 2 hours. We had no idea of it because all that was it. That was the request. Like, Jim, do you hear me? Like, Jim, do you hear me? Jim, can you come this way? So it was just quietly repeated, and then he'd have to smack the crap out of his opponent and see Jim. And I'd see him flick his ear over in his eyes, like, I hear you, but I got to beat this guy up. I'm like, can you beat him up and walk over this way? And the answer is yes. Very slowly. It takes quite a bit of time to do that. But we had no sense of the time. We just knew that was what we needed to get accomplished. So we had to find a way to work with those two bulls to make it happen. It was only afterwards, when we stepped out of animal time, looked at the clock, that we became aware of human time. So we impose these human limits on ourselves and on our animals. You know, we run one-hour classes. I don't know why. If I was going to run a training school again, most of my classes would probably be an hour and a half, actually. Last classes I taught with last winter, that's exactly what the classes were. So it was a relaxed pace. It gave people time. But anytime I hear an instructor or a trainer or a handler say, well, I had to, you know, I only had these many minutes, like, right there you just blew the relationship, because it became about the clock. It didn't become about the animal. So I think I would pay less attention to the clock. I would pay a lot more attention to the animal, and I'd be really careful that I myself am in a listening posture, and I actually am listening. Some people stand there looking patient, and what they're really waiting for is when to throw the cookie.
That's right. It's that patient, impatient thing. They look like they're waiting, but really they're kind of tapping their toe internally, thinking, when's it going to happen?
Yep. It's like, I'm gonna click this, I'm going to throw that, and I'm going to give this. Like, hang on a second. And so a much more natural response happens, right? So if you're trying to teach an animal something and there is a good response, then the shift in your own body becomes a giant marker to the animal. It's how they educate each other, right? You know, I do this, you do that. Yes, that's the response I wanted. I do this, you did that. Nah, that's not what I want. And so they're not running over to stuff cookies in each other's mouths. And I use a lot of food because food is a currency, and it makes sense to the animal. But it's not the substitute ever for the genuine whole body response by me of, not, it wasn't quite what I was looking for, or, oh my goodness, that was brilliant. Because that's the very first thing they read. The cookies shouldn't do the work. The cookies should be the icing on the cake.
Well, that's some good advice. It's time to take our first break to hear from our sponsors. We'll be back in a few minutes with more of our show. We'll be right back.
Interested in learning more? Visit physical therapist Sally Morgan's website at sallymorganpt.com, where you will find details about her upcoming speaking engagements, craniosacral therapy, and Tellington T-Touch offerings, as well as information about holistic care for animals. Join the mailing list today and be the first to learn about upcoming events and special offers. Sally Morgan is a best-selling author, and her book, Dances of the Heart, Connecting with Animals, details her journey of learning to listen to animals. Her unique set of animal connection cards offers 52 activities to enhance your relationships with the animals in your life, and she suggests that you ask your pet to choose a card each week. Both Sally's book and her cards are available on Amazon and her website, sallymorganpt.com. Join Sally Morgan PT CST Daily on Facebook for conversations with a corgi, and visit YouTube for past episodes as well as Sally's TED Talk. When it comes to our pets' health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, pure New Zealand deer antler velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit LifePureRecovery.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune in to world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan, and now radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show, where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand deer antler velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's dental drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's dental drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Hello, and welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on DreamVision7Radio.com. And I'm your host, holistic physical therapist for pets and people, and Dr. Judy Morgan's sister, Sally Morgan. And I'm here with dog expert Suzanne Clothier. And Suzanne, I really am excited about your functional assessment tool that we can use to look at our relationship with our dog and track how he's doing. Can you tell us more about this functional assessment tool you have?
So the functional assessment tool is different from the relationship assessment tool. RAT, which is the relationship assessment tool, is really meant for trainers, therapy dog groups, even rescue groups, shelters, to look at the dynamics between a handler and a dog. FAT, on the other hand, is really meant to help all of us, whether we're, we just have one dog that keeps us company all day, or we're in charge of, 150 dogs out in the kennel. We're actually interested in how is this individual dog doing. So I tell my students that if we're talking about dogs with an S, that S stands for statistics. And you should never forget that. So when I say dogs, are carnivores. I know some dogs that are vegetarians.
Right.
And dogs do this and dogs do that. That's statistically speaking. But what I'm always interested in is the individual dog, no S. And as someone who has spent their entire life caring for animals, I've done that professionally in many capacities. And, of course, here at the farm, as you listed, our entire zoo that we have, minus rabbits, old enough. If I look out on the lawn, to be fair, there is a rabbit out there in the snow that I've contemplated adding some carrots to the zoo. So that must be psychically what you're caught to. So I'm accustomed to caring for animals, and one of the things in caring professionally for animals, if you're any good at it, is you become really tuned into little things. Like when I was managing a barn, I could walk through a barn and it looked like I was just walking down the aisle, but in my head, each time as I looked into each stall, there was a catalog in my head of this is how Ming stands, this is how Ming eats, this is typical for Ming, this is normally his posture, this is how he interacts with people. So any shift was like, why is he standing with his head against the wall? Why is he not here eating? Why? So the littler things are the things that help us as good caretakers, as good husbands of our animals, to really understand how they're doing. So a professional has one sense of that because they have two things. One is the context of a great deal of experience. So if I go out to my barn, I see a horse standing, for example, in a sawhorse stance. If I'm an experienced horse person, I know we have a really significantly serious problem. This horse may be laminitic.
Right.
I'll be calling the vet. To an amateur eye, though, one of my ex-husbands, he came in from giving out night hay, and I had been soaking in a bubble bath, and I said, everybody good in the barn? He's like, yeah, Jeffy wouldn't get up. I was like, what? He goes, no, he was just laying there, up against the wall, and he just wouldn't get up. I put his hay in, I guess we'll eat it later. And I'm rocketing out of the bathtub.
Oh, boy.
Behind me. Because the poor horse was calfed. He was stuck up against the wall with his neck back against his barrel.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, does that look like a way a horse would sleep? Like, you've got to be kidding me. That was a big one. I was like, I don't know. He seemed okay. I was like, oh, my God.
He wasn't moving.
Yeah, exactly. I figured he was just comfy. It's like, yeah, there's no such thing as a horse that, yeah, no. Mm-hmm. So what FAT does is it looks at the dog. We're doing it for dogs now. We will eventually do it for other species as well. It looks at the dog across 15 aspects. So we have the physiological aspects, we have the cognitive aspects, and we have social. Because how well an animal's functioning tells us what we need to do to help him. So if he's highly functional and his life is not interrupting the daily normal functions of life, then we don't have to worry too much. If I've got my horses, they're out there, they're eating, they're pooping, they're drinking, they're eating, they're bright-eyed, they're cheerful, I don't have to worry. If I have a horse who's down and can't get up and isn't eating and isn't drinking, I have to make adaptations very quickly to help support him in whatever way. So this is what FAT does. It scores this so that people that don't have a lot of experience have a context of, oh, that's just how he is. It's like, yes, but against normal function.
Oh, this would be such a treasure at so many therapeutic riding centers that are run by people that are new to horses and animals in general. Really need a way to look at their animals closely, because they may be coming from the field of psychology and not equestrian arts.
Yep. That's exactly it. So when I say to someone, you know, how's he doing? So the classic answer, right, and vets will tell you it's their least favorite answer on the planet, how's Buster doing? Oh, he's fine. It's like, fine is not an answer. It's like, is he eating? And when they say yes, that may mean to Mrs. Smith, well, Buster's eating as long as I sit on the floor and I roasted the steak that I was going to give my husband, and I'm hand-feeding him one bite at a time with a lot of coaxing and a lot of fresh Parmesan. That means he's eating. What we mean is, I give you your regular food, you put your face in it, you polish the bowl. So FAT takes it and grades it in a really detailed way, the nuances of what normal function looks like, so that we actually have an idea. So we can, number one, track how much support does this dog need from the environment. You know, if I have an old horse and he doesn't have teeth, well, if I'm not soaking pellets or hay cubes, he's going to die.
Right.
If he's dropping food, it's like, oh, he's a sloppy eater. I heard that once from a barn manager.
Wow.
He's not a sloppy eater. He's dropping the food out of his mouth because he needs dental work. And so the same thing. This is what FAT was aimed at. So we can track it if we add changes. Is this dog now changing? He is eating better. He is pooping regularly, or the diarrhea has stopped, or the incontinence has changed. So we do, physiologically, we do eating, drinking, urination, defecation, sleep and rest. My brain just went, I think that's, pain and mobility.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So those are all scaled. And you just simply answer questions. If you can tick a box, the application scores it for you and presents this very cool graph that at a glance shows you what's green, what's yellow, what's red. Cognitively, we look at play, we look at learning, and we look at performance. Those are two different issues. And then socially, we look at the dog with familiar people, unfamiliar people, the absence of the preferred persons, and then familiar dogs and unfamiliar dogs. So at a glance, let's say you bring your dog to my facility for daycare and boarding. If I say, so tell me about your dog, you're like, oh, he's really nice. He worries a little bit, you know, sometimes when I leave him. And here's some extra food. If he gets weird, just put some cheese on it. He'll probably eventually eat it. That's not really a good detailed bit of info. If I actually walk you through FAT, I will actually learn that, oh, well, yeah, we never crate him because he breaks out and tears his paws open, and he is an escape artist and he will break through windows. I would know that from FAT, and I would know he won't eat if there's another dog looking at him.
Like, boy, these are important things for a person with a daycare to know.
Well, exactly. So what we're working on is the question will be, if you are a professional caring for other people's animals, how can you not have FAT? How can you actually take good care of this animal without the detailed and current info? So you could board your dog with me today and everything's hunky-dory and it's green, but unbeknownst to me, when you come back just 2 weeks later, something has happened and now we have a different issue. We have, in essence, a different dog we're needing to care for. It also helps us track changes. Is this dog settling in okay? You know, is this new medication working? Is the dietary change we made, is that a good one? How is he adjusting to this, that, or the other thing? So it's a very fluid and very current thing. And it produces a really nice graphic that makes it easy at a glance to say, whoa, 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 what's going on here with this dog? So you can say this is red, for example. It'll then show you what the details are. It's like this dog will not eat. If he's interrupted by noises, he'll stop and he will not resume eating. He will not eat in the presence of other animals. It'll show me exactly what that individual dog is about, and then I know how best to help him if that's possible.
Well, and I love the fact that you've got the red, green, and yellow. Can you tell us a little bit about the colors that you chose to define different areas and about the scale?
So simple, you know, green's always good. Green means there's no big need to adapt for this dog in that particular setting or as he's being handed to you and into your care. All is well. He's functioning on that particular aspect. So, and it could be, it's by the aspect, right? So he could be cognitively having dementia, in which case that might be red. But over on, you know, eating, he'll eat anything in sight. So that might be a green. He's a happy eater and not a problem there. The yellow says we have some concerns here. We need to keep an eye on this. We need to possibly be supportive or the animal's needs may not be met well. So if I know, for example, the dog really, he's easily interrupted by other dogs barking around him when he's eating and he gets too agitated, if I don't feed him in a separate quiet place, his eating may go off. He may not finish all his meals, and that long term, of course, comes to be problematic. So then I know, so that this dog can eat in peace and digest in peace, I need to make sure he's in this spot in my office where he can eat in peace, where his next-door neighbor could care less. So the yellow says we need to make some adaptations here so that this animal's needs are met. These are past just little, you know, quirky preferences. This is actually starting to become a need. In the red zone, we have serious issues. We must make accommodations or this animal's seriously at risk. So let's say we had a red dog on the absence of owners. That is a dog who is going to make concerted efforts to escape from where he is. He may try to self-harm. He may need to be sedated if he's left without his owner. Where the yellow dog might say, I would rather not be here without my person. But as long as there's another person nearby or there's another dog, I'm okay. So the color coding instantly tells us how significant the problem is. And also, again, what's this track? So if we have a dog who's in a red zone, we make some changes and we bump him up to the yellow or the green zone, we know we've done something good for that guy.
Well, that's such an easy thing to work with. And tell us about your scale of 1 to 10 that you use within that rubric.
So it's a 10-point scale, 10 being, you know, highly functional, no big problems, all systems go, and the 0 meaning that animal's completely dysfunctional. So on an eating scale, a 10 would be, you know, he readily eats whatever his normal food is, and a 0 is the dog's not eating at all. And at that point, of course, we're talking veterinary care. So it's a pretty straightforward scale. It's a fairly nicely balanced one so that, like I said, you don't have to do the scoring. You don't have to figure it out. You simply have to be able to tick off the boxes of the options. You know, what is it you see? All of this is based in observation. So one thing that's
such a great tool that you've given us, and we need to go to another break now to hear from our sponsors. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets with physical therapist for pets and people, Sally Morgan, on DreamVision7Radio.com. We'll be back in a few moments.
Interested in learning more? Visit physical therapist Sally Morgan's website at sallymorganpt.com, where you will find details about her upcoming speaking engagements, craniosacral therapy, and Tellington T-Touch offerings, as well as information about holistic care for animals. Join the mailing list today and be the first to learn about upcoming events and special offers. Sally Morgan is a best-selling author, and her book, Dances of the Heart, Connecting with Animals, details her journey of learning to listen to animals. Her unique set of animal connection cards offers 52 activities to enhance your relationships with the animals in your life, and she suggests that you ask your pet to choose a card each week. Both Sally's book and her cards are available on Amazon and her website, SallyMorganPT.com. Join Sally Morgan PT CST Daily on Facebook for conversations with a corgi, and visit YouTube for past episodes as well as Sally's TED Talk. When it comes to our pet's health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, Pure New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit LifePureRecovery.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune in to world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan, and now radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, and I'm holistic physical therapist and Dr. Judy's sister, Sally Morgan. And I'm here with my guest, Suzanne Clothier, who really is a dog goddess, really. She is not just a trainer. She really is a pet expert in every way, and horses as well. And we were talking about her functional assessment tool that she's developed. And Suzanne, I'm so excited. Can you tell us about how this tool is being used to do some research for animals? I saw a few things about that on your website, and I think that's really exciting.
Well, we've got Dr. Erica Fuhrbacher. I'm not sure where she's at with that project, but they were tracking dogs that were pulled out of shelters and then placed with college students to raise them. And what they were watching for was, can fat tell us why, when, or where the blossoming occurs? So the dogs that they pulled out of the shelter behaved in a one way, but after they were in their new homes for a certain period of time, they would begin to act in ways that were not expected. So one of the questions there is, when we do, quote, temperament assessment, it would be like saying, I went to interview Sally, and she had broken both her legs. And so when I asked her to dance for us, she didn't do a very good job. It's like, well, of course she couldn't demonstrate that. She had broken her legs. She was in the hospital on painkillers. And just not that I'm wishing that for you, believe me. Is it a matter of temperament testing is only going to be useful if the animal's actually functional enough to show us who they really are? So that's a new question in temperament testing. So that's one of the things that Erica's working on.
I think that is a really important thing, too. I know that there's a pretty big shelter near me where part of the temperament test, and, you know, this is for a stray dog that's been wandering for 2 weeks and is picked up by the dog control officer, now gets dumped in the shelter. So part of their test was to take the food away from the dog while he was eating. And if he had any negative response in any way, that was the end of the dog. which is so unfair. If I've been starving, I might bite too if you take my food away.
Oh, I don't have to be starving. If you reach for the french fries on my plate, I might stab you with a fork, but that's me. So, the question is this, right? So the dogs that do well under those tests, they're just more resilient dogs. And there's other dogs who are not going to demonstrate their best selves under great pressure, but in the right home that doesn't pressure them. It's like you said, you're not, you know, comfortable with snakes, so if I test Sally Morgan in a room full of boas, I would not be surprised that I may see the very worst version of Sally Morgan.
Yeah, that SAT score would be so low.
And if I put you in a home situation where you don't have to deal with snakes, I will see a different version of Sally. Not that one is false, the other isn't. One is you under great pressure, and one is you in an environment that suits you. So this is one of the challenges that we always have when we're looking at temperament and assessment. So that's, I think FAT can help us understand how functional is this animal. Because if he's telling us in his function, this environment has me distressed, right? And I am stressed by this and I'm struggling to cope with just where I'm living, then I have to be very careful taking the results of any test seriously. If the animal says, no, I'm good, I don't like it, you know, but I'm good. It's kind of like airport delays, right? And your plane will be delayed for 14 hours. It's such a test of temperament to see what people do. It's just entertaining. I've had to watch that experiment played out many times now.
Oh, yeah.
In my life. I think there's the ultimate temperament test right there, airports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or heavy traffic.
Exactly. What do you do? Shrug and put another book in Audible, you know, call a friend, or fume and work yourself into a lather. It says something about who you are and how you handle that kind of stress.
And, well, I love that we can use your tool. Pardon me. I love that we can use your tool with, you know, for instance, dogs being used with in therapy settings or animal-assisted therapy and shelters, because I think so many animals that are being used, and horses in particular at this point in time, in these settings are not always very well understood by the people working with them, and this tool is just wonderful for that.
I think there's going to be a growing tendency. We've put dogs into the service of mankind. We've done the same with horses. Many of the people I've met and worked with in those fields, they mean well, but they are not expert animal husbands by any means, and they're sometimes so taken with the humane notion of what they're doing for the people that the animal's needs are badly overlooked. There's one horse therapy organization. In their materials, they're talking about selecting a horse for this kind of work. And they said temperament didn't really matter. It was okay even if they were a little aggressive because some clients might need that. And I thought, oh, my God, if we write, you know, human counselor, it's like doesn't really matter. You know,
well, how else can that horse tell you he has something going on than to raise the vibration of his experience? And if we push him, he's going to start getting dangerous.
Yeah. So I think there's a need to understand first, however well we intend the work, that the animal will have his own individual capacity to bear the situation. So I used to do therapy work with a bunch of my dogs, and two of them loved going to the nursing home. Loved it. I mean, they were really just delighted. I could probably get to turn them loose, other than they would have jumped in bed with people. But two of my other dogs found the nursing home unbelievably depressing. They could do maybe 15 minutes, and every time we were anywhere near an exit, they were hopeful that we were actually going to be leaving.
Oh, boy.
They were very agreeable. They were very good dogs with great temperaments, so I could insist. But it began to dawn on me. These guys came home, and they slept really hard. It had taken a lot out of them. The other dogs napped on the way home and were perfectly fine. But the two
Well,
dogs
that brings us to the idea of stress in dogs, and how do people, you know, with even a horse in a therapeutic situation or your dog in your own home, can you give us some pointers about how to recognize stress in our dogs? I know there's a therapy dog group around here, and a guy is training with the group, and he said, oh, look at him. He rolls over. He just loves belly rubs before he even greets the person. And I'm like, that's not necessarily a good thing.
Right. So rolling over on your back and asking for a belly rub may, to an uneducated eye, look the same as a dog who says, please stop, I can't take anymore. They look very, very different to the knowledgeable eye. So one of the things we have to keep asking when we're looking at stress in a situation where we're putting dogs to work for us, right, therapy dogs, support dogs, is, first of all, is there voluntary cooperation? Is this dog actually free, or this horse free to leave and walk away? Or are they free to tell us no thank you? And are we keeping a careful eye to the more natural rhythms of interaction that animals have versus the long, sustained human approach, which is, this is the problem we have, so I'm going to stay here till it's done. That's just not how animals tend to deal with interactions. So they get forced into interactions, and then they start telling their person, I really don't want to be doing this. And it might be that they're as simple as their gait slows down a bit. It might be that they turn their head, and it's a very polite way of saying, please.
Where's the door?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we can scold them. So I just tell people, like, are you aware of having to keep that animal in that space? Are they relaxed? How does this compare to how they look in your living room? You know, is this animal free to go? If you were to take that leash off, if you were to unsnap from that halter, where would they go? I'm not recommending you do that in a nursing home. I'm just saying. It's a question, because almost always the handler actually knows what the answer would be, which is, well, he'd leave. It's like, right. So there's a wonderful book called Teaming with Your Therapy Dog by Ann Howie, H-O-W-I-E. And that one, I think, should be on the shelf of anyone who is using any animal in any therapeutic setting, because she has really carefully outlined what the handler's responsibilities are and the rights and freedoms that the therapy animal has as well. And while it's written about dogs, that's her expertise, it is equally applicable to any animal that you're going to put into someone's hands. So you'll see this on the national news. There's been a huge crisis, and there's dogs that get, you know, brought to the scene to help comfort everyone, and on paper that is an amazing and wonderful thing. And if I'm ever in some horrible tragedy, I hope to God they bring me a dog. But I would also hope that they brought me a dog or a horse who actually was okay being there.
Yeah, when I brought my dogs to New York City after 9/11, I got a lot of compliments from people because my dogs weren't stressed, and a lot of the search dogs in particular were very stressed. They couldn't find things, and they were, you know, working days and days, and it was a horrible environment. But I know part of why my dogs were happy was because they went to go walk around the park at night, and they had chicken, and they had me doing T-Touch on them, and it was really like I was meeting every single one of their possible needs in every minute that they weren't working, and so they were happy, and, you know, they just have a temperament that they like to do that work.
Exactly.
Which brings me to my next question, Suzanne. Can you tell us some of the things you see as the real benefits of having a relationship with your dog instead of just having a good dog that you've trained?
I think the thing that people tell me over and over again is, number one, they're blown away by the level of communication that they just didn't know this depth of relationship was possible in an animal. When there's mutual respect and trust and cooperation, there's a lightness. There's a real joyfulness of happening and a lack of conflict. And so many people have had animals that were either, you know, either not well suited to their lifestyle or not well suited to the sport they were asking them. And so there was always this resistance, this conflict, this argument between horse and rider or dog and handler. And when they get it right, that all just evaporates. And it blows people's minds because, number one, it feels amazing to have
right.
an animal who freely says, sure, you know, what's up? What are we doing? So that's the most charming question of all in a relationship, right? It's
right.
This is what I want to do. It's like, hey, how about we? So the we thing is absolutely huge. That's why we created that CCC course, was to give people a simple and fun way to experience what that kind of cooperation and mutual respect looks like, and to clarify the communication. And that's what people say, like, I had no idea. I thought I had a good relationship until I started really listening to the dog, really engaging and working with them in a way that made sense to them.
Right.
And they're like, this is a whole nother level. It's like, you know, I always said my old history teacher in high school, he had dancing class. We all had to take dancing. He was a spectacular dancer. So after dancing with the clods, you know, my classmates, then Mr. Kreider took over. I was like, oh, oh, that's how it's supposed to feel. Oh, yeah, I can see why people like to dance. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I think it's so important, the work that you're doing to help people find that lightness and joy in their relationship with their dogs. It's such a, we've come such a long way in dog training in the last 20 years, and I think we have quite a ways to go to get to the side where you are already. It's been my pleasure to have you with us today. You can find out more about Suzanne Clothier on her website, suzanneclothier.com. That's SUZANNECLOTHIER.com. And you can find her on her Facebook page, where she has over 12,000 followers, and she has just wonderful stuff there. And until next week, thanks so much for listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets with your host today, Sally Morgan, holistic physical therapist, and Dr. Judy's sister on DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you so much, Suzanne. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Sally, for having me.
That's all for today. Find more answers to your questions next time on Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, every Monday and Tuesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time by going to DreamVision7Radio.com. Join holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy to discover healthy options for raising your pets in a more holistic manner. Visit DrJudyMorgan.com to learn more.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.